ॐ नमो भगवते वासुदेवाय। ॐ नमो भगवते वासुदेवाय। ॐ नमो भगवते वासुदेवाय।
Srimad Bhagavatam, 1st Canto, Chapter 8, Text 21. Krishnaya Vasudevaya, Devaki Nandanaya cha, Nanda Gopa Kumaraya, Govindaya Namo Namaha. Let me therefore offer my respectful obeisances unto the Lord, who has become the son of Vasudev, the pleasure of Devaki, the boy of Nanda, and the other cowherd men of Vrindavan, and the enlivener of the cows and the senses. Purport. The Lord, being thus unapproachable by any material assets, out of unbounded and causeless mercy, descends on the earth as he is, in order to show his special mercy upon his unalloyed devotees, and to diminish the upsurges of the demonic persons. Queen Kunti specifically adores the incarnation or descent of Lord Krishna above all other incarnations, because in this particular incarnation he is more approachable. In the Rama incarnation he remained a king's son from his very childhood, but in the incarnation of Krishna, although he was the son of a king, he at once left the shelter of his real father and mother, King Vasudev and Queen Devaki, just after his appearance, and went to the lap of him, thereby that human prosperity depends more on these two items, namely Brahminical culture and cow protection. Lord Krishna is never satisfied where these are lacking.
Let me therefore offer my respectful obeisances unto the Lord, who has become the son of Vasudev, the pleasure of Devaki, the boy of Nanda, and the other cowherd men of Vrindavan, and the enlivener of the cows and the senses. This verse is from the famous prayers of Queen Kunti, which Srila Prabhupada lectured on these series of verses 3 times. Srila Prabhupada was very fond of these. They very beautifully and feelingly delineate the position of the Supreme, of Krishna as the Supreme Personality of Godhead, and at the same time express the transcendental emotions that the devotees experience in a relationship of love with him. So these prayers, they are expressive of Kunti Maharani's great affection for Krishna, which is also mixed with awe and reverence, understanding him to be the Supreme Personality of Godhead, and her appreciation for those devotees whose love for Krishna goes even beyond that of affection mixed with awe and reverence, pure affection with no tinge of considering Krishna as being a very great person far above the devotee. One cannot become very close to someone if he considers that this person is very much greater than me and very much above me. Because always there is always a hesitation. Will I do something wrong? I'm not fit to be here. So, in the language of Sri Chaitanya Charitamrita, that devotion to Krishna in awe and reverence, that is called Vitta Bhakti, which Srila Prabhupada translates as crippled. Devotion is crippled by the sense of understanding Krishna to be great. Now, we find in Bhagavad Gita and in all of our preaching that it is established that Krishna is the Supreme Personality of Godhead, and all this preaching is simply to establish this point, to understand that He is supreme, we are subordinate to Him, and our constitutional position is to serve Krishna, which is absolutely correct, which every conditioned soul needs to know. These are eternal, unarguable, transcendental facts. Unarguable means they're fools who will argue, but they're fools. Sane persons can understand that we are controlled, there is a controller, and our own self-interest is to submit to his control, because he is a benevolent controller. Benevolent means that he is not controlling us just like in an automated factory. It's not like that. We are not robots, and nor is God a chess player. But he himself, Raso Vaisaha, he is Rasa. He is the fountainhead and embodiment of the wonderful feelings or the wonder that is generated from transcendental loving exchanges. So, to understand God as great, that is required for those, particularly for those who in the material world who defy this principle and try to establish I am great and defy Krishna's greatness. They'll either say that we don't believe that any such person as Krishna exists, or they say we believe in God but not Krishna. Or they try to rationalize that Krishna was a great philosopher, or that he was good in his childhood, but he became corrupted when he became older. Or that he will come back again later on in a new incarnation, freed from all these perversities. Or they say that Krishna simply represents or is the embodiment of the ultimate principle, which is impersonal. So in so many ways they try to avoid surrendering to Krishna. That's why most of what goes on in the name of bhakti in India, and nowadays even outside India, is not really bhakti at all. It's apparent bhakti, but bhakti means to understand Krishna is the supreme personality of Godhead, with all the ramifications of that statement, and that the jiva's only duty is to surrender to Krishna. Just like I often ask devotees that, well, do you agree that Krishna consciousness is the main purpose of human life? Do you all agree with that? Wrong. It's the only purpose. If you say main purpose, that means you have some other ideas. So, Krishna consciousness is life, and everything else is If we have other purposes, then we have to be born again and again to fulfill those purposes, because other purposes are never fulfilled. Desires are never fulfilled, and there's all one desire leads to another. There's no end to it. So we should understand that the only purpose of life is to serve Krishna, and being incarcerated in this material condition, we have various duties to perform in connection with this material condition, but we should understand that the material condition is itself an anartha. Anartha means that which is not our artha. Artha means that which is desirable, that which is required. Paramartha, that's sometimes translated in English as spiritualism. So paramartha means our spirit. Paramartha means our only artha. We have so many arthas, so many purposes. But when we understand that our only artha is paramartha, then we can actually attain paramartha. But as long as we are thinking that we have anything else to do but to serve Krishna, then we cannot properly serve Krishna. So material, our duties in this material world should be executed only in as much as they nourish Krishna consciousness. That should be the goal. Dharmasvanushtitapunsam Vishvaksena Katasuya Notpadiyat Yadiratim Shrama Evihi Kevalam. Anything else we do, any activities that we may perform, if they do not lead us to the level of becoming attracted to hearing about Krishna, then simply it is a waste of time. So this is to be understood, that we are, our only duty is to serve Krishna. Then when we understand Krishna is the Supreme Personality of Godhead, we are His eternal servants, our only duty is to serve Him, then we should engage like that. But in other words, we should engage in Krishna consciousness. But from Srimad Bhagavatam, we can understand that beyond serving Krishna as the Supreme Personality of Godhead, He is the Supreme Personality of Godhead, but there is a level even higher than that in which the devotees simply love Him, not because He is the Supreme Personality of Godhead, but simply because they love Him for who He is, the Supreme Loving and Lovable Person. Chaitanya Mahaprabhu especially points towards this kind of devotion. That, and in Chaitanya Charitamrita, as I said, this devotion to bhakti in which there is prominent conception of Krishna's supremacy, that's called Vitta Bhakti or Kripal Bhakti. Just to give an example, we find someone in this world who is famous and well-positioned is popular. You'll find, just like we see, that someone has a very high post, Prime Minister of India. So as long as they're Prime Minister of India, at least in the Indian newspaper, they're on the front page almost every day, and whatever they say will be reported. Then comes the election, and then he becomes the ex-Prime Minister. And no longer do people pay that much attention to him as previously. What he says, they might put on page 6. no longer on page one. Or if someone is very rich, then he has so many friends. But if he loses all his money, he doesn't have any friends. And the friends who were so eager to meet him before, they don't want to see him at all. As long as he has money, they're thinking, well, I could get some of that, I could share, I can go to their nice house and go to the parties and enjoy, and it's prestigious to be linked with him. But when he doesn't have any money, they don't want to be seen with him. Oh, a beggar, I don't see you there, he'll take some money away from me. So the friendship is based on what is perceived as one's own self-interest. Beautiful woman has so many admirers. And when she becomes older, not beautiful anymore, then no more. That's the fate of every film actress. That, just like in Tamil Nadu, I once walked into some home in Tamil Nadu and I saw some film was on, and beautiful young actress. I kind of recognized. I said, is that Jayalalitha? I said, yes. So she was beautiful then, but not anymore. She's famous for other things now. I don't want to say, otherwise I might get arrested when I go back there. How many times has she been arrested? You don't know, you don't follow. Well, if you're in India, you have to know these things, because when the politicians get arrested, then you have to be careful. And there's so many riots and this and that. So, of course, she remains famous, but infamous, whatever, depends which party you support. But the beauty that was so attractive, they'll write poetry about, so much poetry about beautiful women. Okay. Jai, Hare Krishna. Beautiful woman will have so many admirers, but then when her beauty is finished, then not anymore. So they're not actually attracted to the person, but to the prospect of personal enjoyment from contact with that person. So therefore, one may respect Krishna and love Krishna for his greatness. But from the standpoint of the Vrajvasis, or those who love Krishna, not because he's great, but just because he is so charming, beautiful. Even they cannot describe exactly why. The gopis, they also say, we don't know why we're so attracted to this Krishna. He simply cheats us all the time. He calls us with his flute. And then when we come, he says, what are you doing here? You should go home. He attracts us by his smiles and his arched eyebrows. And we gave everything for him. And then he gave us up. So the gopis, they said, we should, better for our own self-interest, we shall stop talking about Krishna. We'll just forget Krishna. But then they found they cannot. They are trapped. But that trapping is very sweet and very nice, that love of Krishna. So Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, this is his special contribution, that prema pumarto mahan, love of Krishna beyond even the concept of understanding him as the Supreme Personality of Godhead. Of course, we have to understand him as the Supreme Personality of Godhead. If in the immature stage we start to think that I shall just treat Krishna with disrespect, as Vamsidas Babaji apparently did, for instance, if we were to behave as Vamsidas Babaji Maharaj did with his deities, we'd be great offenders. He does so out of great love. But not understanding this, people, they project their material sentiments onto Krishna and think that this is bhakti. Just like sometimes we see some of our Western devotees especially, they painted Krishna with big muscles because they think that in the Western concept it should be with big muscles. That's the idea. A man is very good looking if he has big muscles. So when Prabhupada saw this, he said this idea, this concept of beauty, of having big muscles, he said that is the concept of beauty of the meat eaters. Then he showed a nice picture of Krishna from India and said, this is the concept of beauty of the milk drinkers. So it's, we tend to project our own concept. Another example I'll give, one of our devotees told me, is that he visited some home where this Valab Sampradaya, Pushti Marg, in which they're supposed to cultivate the feeling that we're worshipping Krishna as our son. So they have child Krishna, Ladu Gopal or whatever. So the lady of the house was telling him that, yes, I treat Krishna just like my own son. You see, in the evening, I sit and watch the TV, and I bring him and sit him on the chair next to me, and we sit and watch TV together. I have so much bhakti. There's another story that from Bengal, that one so-called religious preacher, caste Goswami, in a public lecture, he was giving an example of spontaneous devotional service, giving the example of himself. And he described how one evening, some months ago, he had left his home in the early evening to go to give a lecture a few miles away, going by walking. That was the method that everyone, even now in Bengal, at our programs, sometimes people would walk 20 miles to come to our programs, or we would have to walk to go to some village. That's the, for those of us brought up in the modern age, we may be surprised, but that's the normal mode of locomotion. Walking. So anyway, he walked, and it was winter time. So as you know, well, maybe you don't know because you're from South India, but in Bengal in the winter, daytime temperature is pleasant, but night can be quite cold. So he walked maybe 4 miles to another village to give a lecture. So he was describing this in another lecture some months later. So he walked, and then he sat down and he started to give the lecture. And he was halfway through the lecture when he suddenly remembered that he had left the window open in the room where his deity Gopal was, and he hadn't put any warm clothing. So he got up in the middle of the lecture, and without telling anyone what he was doing, he ran back all the way and came and bowed down and apologized to Gopal and closed the window and gave him some warm cloths. And then he cooked up a very nice, warm, hot, nourishing pot of tea and offered it to Gopal. Then he put Gopal to rest and he took the prasad remnants. And when all the people heard this, in the lecture that he gave, they all said, oh, this is wonderful, this is very good. So it sounds very good, doesn't it? Up to the point of tea. Because he thought that I like tea, therefore Krishna should like tea. This is projecting our own contaminated consciousness. Bhakti means to understand what Krishna wants us to do, and then we do it. Not that what I like to do, Krishna should like to do. It's round the wrong way. Sometimes the we hear some similar arguments that this material world is a perverted reflection of the spiritual world, therefore everything here should be there also. So someone is proposing that, well, soccer and volleyball, and that should all be there also, because this is a perverted reflection. So there must be sports in the spiritual world also. Sports there is, but that Krishna, that's described in Krishna Lila. They take some bale fruit. You know what that is? Bale fruit? What's that? In bilva, it's called in Sanskrit. Bilva. In Hindi and Bengali, it's called bale. So they may throw that, but they don't have any organ. They don't go to the cowherd grounds and they mark off a cricket pitch and start playing cricket. Not like that. This idea, then there should be blue jeans in the spiritual world, pornography. All these things are there. No, it's a perverted reflection. It's not that everything is. In the reflection, there's perversity. So the perverse things that are here are not there. So we think, well, how can I go to the spiritual world if there's no baseball? Better I stay here. Well, there's something like that. I mean, actually in... That's described in the pastimes of Lord Balaram, that on the Raivatak mountain, that the Vivida, he was ripping up rocks and throwing them, and Lord Balaram was ripping up trees and smashing them away. So maybe that's something like baseball, but but there was no runs, and I don't even know the rules of baseball, but I suppose you get some runs, is it? Like something like in cricket, probably. I don't even know the rules of cricket also, I'm glad to say. So, these are... Generally what goes on in the world in the name of the religion is that people, they consider how I like things, and then we think God will bless that, and eventually I can go to heaven, and heaven will be like I want it to be. Something like England, the famous 100 years ago. Highly respected English theologian, C.S. Lewis, gave what his definition of what he thinks heaven is like England, because he's English. Janani janma bhumischa swargameva gariyasi. You know that saying? Mother and motherland is more glorious than swargaloka. This is what we think. So the worm in stool is thinking, this is the best stool. Because I live in it, so it must be the best. So this Jagat Darshan, thinking in terms of this world, it should be replaced by Golok Darshan, seeing through the eyes of Shastra and understanding what Krishna wants. Even there may be very advanced devotees, but they find it very difficult to understand how Krishna is the Supreme Personality of Godhead, and his pastimes, especially with the gopis, they're very difficult for them to understand. Because they think that Krishna should be moral according to worldly terms. Krishna is the most moral, there's no doubt about it. But that cannot be understood in worldly terms. Every man who thinks this is my wife and I should enjoy is immoral. Even that's considered moral to have a relationship with a woman inside marriage is considered moral, and outside marriage is considered immoral. But even within marriage, if one thinks that this woman is to be enjoyed by me, or the woman, if the woman thinks that the man is to be enjoyed by me, that is immoral. Because actual morality means to understand that Krishna is the supreme enjoyer, and everything should be for his pleasure also, only. That's why I said that Krishna consciousness is not the main purpose of life, it's the only purpose of life. So, every man in this world who thinks I'm very morally living with my wife, he is immoral if he doesn't consider that his union with his wife is only for the sake of satisfying Krishna. Bringing children into this world is only for the sake of satisfying Krishna. That is moral life. And if we say that, well, the gopis, they were wives of others, that is not possible. Because no one can actually be the wife of anyone else but Krishna, because Krishna is the only actual husband. So from the platform of worldly morality, it's very difficult to understand. In Shastra, it's very clearly given that even the mlechas and yavanas, they can, or previously they could understand this point, that a man marries a woman, and that man associates only with that woman, and that woman associates only with that man, and anything outside of that is immoral. And that's true, and we're not trying to say anything else. On the worldly platform, that should be followed. But it should be understood that this relationship is not an absolute relationship. It is bounded, has the boundaries of space, time, and thought. These are the three basic material boundaries: space, time, and our own limited perceptions and conceptions. But Krishna is described as ulangita trividha sima. He is beyond these three kinds of limits. So, actually understanding Krishna means not to judge him by what we think should be right, or our ideas of morality. Even scripturally given ideas of morality do not apply to Krishna. The scriptural rules of morality are to guide conditioned souls. But Krishna is not bound by them. He's in a different position. He is Prabhu. Jiva has to obey the laws of dharma. But whether Krishna obeys or doesn't obey, generally he follows for the sake of setting an example of other, for others. But he's not bound to follow the laws of dharma. Rather, the sweetness of Vraja Leela is increased by the apparent transgression of worldly dharma. It appears that worldly morals are being transgressed, and from the worldly point of view they are. But that demonstrates the independent nature of Krishna's pastimes, and adds the element of risk. This is a very complex subject, actually, how the gopis, and Krishna and the gopis, ananda chinmaya rasa pratibhavitabhihi, they're not products of this material world anyway. But their pastimes within this world appear to be within this world, although actually they have no touch with this world, and the gopis had no touch with their apparent so-called husbands anyway. But they, by yoga maya potency, they feel that we are part of this world, and that we are going to Krishna giving up our husbands, although actually Krishna is the only husband. So this feeling that they are transgressing morality adds to the risk and the sense of full surrender and giving oneself to Krishna, despite all other considerations. So this is a So Kunti Devi, she's also describing here that she herself, she cannot understand this. It's very virambanam, bewildering, she says. Your pastimes are bewildering. So we should know, we're in the sampradaya of Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, we should know to some extent. We cannot, what is the goal? To serve Krishna in Vrajalila. The service there may take the form of jumping on his shoulders. Doesn't sound like service. We should know that is the goal, but without artificially trying to project ourselves onto that plane without qualification, we should worship that goal and worship the great devotees who are situated on that platform and serve them following the scriptural rules and regulations, understanding that Krishna is the Supreme Personality of Godhead. With awe and reverence, we should serve Krishna, the Supreme Personality of Godhead, hearing about Krishna, chanting about Krishna, serving Krishna without calculations, what shall I get back? But cultivating the mood of selfless service, which will gradually qualify us to be invited to join Vrajalila. The spontaneous, the land of spontaneity. Hare Krishna. I'll finish there. All glories to Srila Prabhupada. Srimad Bhagavatam Ki Jai. Hare Krishna.
You mentioned the Vallabhachari Sampradaya where they treat Krishna to be a small baby.
Yeah, but without the thing, they treat him as a small baby, Krishna, in the Vallabha Sampradaya, without proper training, then they must simply project their material idea of what it means to have a small baby onto Krishna, which is similar, but not exactly the same. It's similar in many ways. Yashoda's love for Krishna appears to be like that of any mother. But the difference is that Yashoda has no material desire to fulfill. She has no desire for personal sense gratification. Krishna is not an accessory to her sense gratificatory plans. Krishna is not her accomplice in the crime of trying to enjoy this material world. So there's there has to be a proper order. Ado shraddha tata sadhu sangha atha bhajana kriya tato narata nivritti syat tato ruchis, and on. So there has to be an order. If you say that Rati age shraddha pache, first we'll come immediately to the stage of taste for Krishna consciousness, and the other things beginning with shraddha, faith, that will come later. But that is incorrect. Rati age shraddha pache rupa noga bolena. That's Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati Thakur has described. Followers of Rupa Goswami, they don't say this, that you can have taste for serving Krishna. You can come to the higher level without going through the primary and intermediate levels. Pradurbhava sadhakanam ayang premna pradurbhava bhagat kramaha. Krama means step by step, gradually. So on the path of prem, ado shraddha, tato nishtha ruchistata, atha saktis tato bhava, ato premabhyudanshati, sadha kana mayang prema, prado bhava bhavet krama. So these are the steps. Initial faith, ado shraddha, tata, then association with devotees. Then taking up the practical activities of devotional service. then becoming free from all worldly attachments and obstacles. Then being fixed in devotional service, having taste for that, becoming completely attached to devotional service, then initial ecstasy of love of Krishna, then actual love of Krishna develops step by step. Hare Krishna. Yeah, please. Spiritual attachment is an impediment to bhakti, but bhakti means to be attached to Krishna. So how can that be an impediment to bhakti?
That's exactly my question. It's easy to understand that material attachment could be an impediment, but
I don't understand that. It could be something that one can be materially attached to something we should be spiritually attached to. That's possible. For instance, we should be attached to our guru for spiritual reasons. But if we become attached because we think, well, he's very famous and I'll become prestigious if I become initiated by him, for instance. Or my guru has more disciples than anyone else, so he's the best guru. This is mundane.
It's not funny, it's happening all the time.
Yeah, so it's a completely mundane outlook. And I'll stick my guru's picture on, I have a bigger picture of my guru and I'll stick on the altar and make everyone see I'm the best disciple. But you'll find this kind of disciple, if the guru acts as a guru should towards that disciple by correcting, then they'll immediately reject. Oh, he's useless. There's no actual spiritual attachment. But actual spiritual attachment, that is the whole, that is bhakti. Oh, that is the foundation of bhakti. It could be also that one is attached to the impersonal Brahman. That's also an obstacle in bhakti. Yeah. No, that's a travesty of bhakti, his apparent devotion. Again, he's projected his own desires for material sense gratification. He thinks that, well, I don't like to be cold, so Krishna shouldn't want to be cold. Okay, that's all right. But then if you think that I like to drink tea, so he should also want to, that means that's why when this incident was described, they said that they described Gopal, and after Gopal's name they put in parentheses question mark. In modern English you'd put quotation marks to mean that so called. He thinks he's worshipping Gopal, but there's not Gopal at all. Such worship is not Gopal doesn't drink tea. And he doesn't accept the offerings of tea drinkers. He may do but not in the way that, not, when Krishna describes patrang pushpam, leaf fly, it doesn't mean tea leaves. We have to get more definition from Shastra. This Goswami, he's described, for a start, why should anyone describe? Well, I'd like to give an example of spontaneous devotional service myself. I'm a great devotee and I'll tell you why. And that in itself is bogus. And then all the people clapped and cheered. Oh, this is wonderful. I was attempting to preach Krishna consciousness in Bengal for so many years. And this misconceptions of which are bhakti, this so-called spiritual attachment, is a great obstacle for preaching, because anyone comes along and sings in a sweet voice and starts crying, and everyone thinks, oh, Mahabhagavat. I've seen so many ridiculous things that people fainting, it's quite common. There's someone's at the Nam Jagya, where they hire groups to sing the so-called some imitation of the Hare Krishna mantra. Then they'll go around putting chandan on everyone. So someone comes up and he can hardly move because he's so overcome by ecstasy, and he puts chandan on someone and embraces them, and then he faints. And everyone says, "Bah! Kiba, so much bhakti. It's just imitation." They'll be singing, "Hare Krishna," like this, as if their heart's about to break. But when they're 2 hours, they're paid for a 2-hour session, but the chanting has to go on continuously. So if the next group is late, they haven't put their makeup on properly or something, Then they just stand around with the scowls on their face. "Hare Krishna, Hare Krishna," the next group comes on late and they give them a dirty look and run off the back and smoke biddies because it's been 2 hours. 2 hours they couldn't smoke, and then the widows come with biri seva. They come and very, with great bhakti, come and offer them biri. So many bogus things. And people think this is bhakti. How perverted. So that is a great obstacle in preaching bhakti. These misconceptions of what it is. That's why even though in Chaitanya Charitamrita there are descriptions of Chaitanya Mahaprabhu fainting, it's all the time. I mean, most of the time you'll find Chaitanya Mahaprabhu has fainted. But in modern, recent acharyas, they're certainly no less exalted than they are personal associates of Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, but we don't find them fainting all over the place. Rather, they restrain that. Even Chaitanya Mahaprabhu restrained. Because there are so many cheaters, and it's easy to mislead people, just show some great bhakti, but people will just take that as a sentiment. So devotees, make an exhibition of their ecstasy, but rather they engage people in kirtan and they preach to them of the necessity of surrendering to Krishna and of philosophically understanding the necessity to do so. Bhakti is based on faith, and people coming to bhakti tend to be faithful. You're all very faithful. You have faith in what I say, I believe, to some, at least, definitely more than most people. If I go in the next house and start saying these things, they'll call the police. "What are you doing here?" "So you're not doing that, you're calling me. Please come." If you go to most houses, door-to-door distributing books, then most people won't be very pleased. So you have some faith. But it's very easy for religious leaders to exploit the faith of their followers. And most of what's going on in the name of religion in the world is simply misappropriation of the faith of people, misguiding them and cheating them. So it's relatively easy to make a show of being a highly advanced devotee, and then everyone will think, "Oh, what a great devotee." But actual devotees are interested in substance, not show. There may be some show, just like we build a big temple. One of the main reasons of building a big temple is to make a big show. Otherwise, just like in Seattle, anyone can come to the temple now and hear about Krishna. And when a big temple is built, they can come and hear about Krishna. The class won't change. The philosophy, the kirtan. But why a big temple? Well, one thing is, Krishna anyway should be served with the best of buildings. But For preaching, we require a big temple that people will be attracted to come. They'll think it's, oh, this is a very beautiful building, or it's a very important organization because it's a big building. The importance of the organization doesn't depend upon the big building. It depends upon what is going on inside the building. But because materialistic people can't understand that, therefore we build big temples, and they come and they listen and think, oh, what he says must be important because he's in a big temple. Which is not, it's not important because it's in a big temple, it's important because it's coming from Vyasadeva through the line of Parampara. But so, show is there to some extent in preaching. But if the preaching is only show, if we become so much interested with show and not with substance, and then we lost it. Then it's not Krishna consciousness. Then we just become mundane. So we have to be very careful. Hari Vilaspur was telling me that they called the Rath Yatra vegetarian and vegan and raw foods festival. I said, well, that attracts many people, and then we. So I said, well, that's all right, but you have to be careful, because then we ourselves will forget that the festival is actually meant for glorifying Lord Jagannath, and we'll think that the main thing is to promote vegetarianism. The danger is there. You can do that, but unless when people come, you very clearly establish that the goal of life is not to be a vegetarian, the goal of life is to be a servant of Lord Jagannath, the Supreme Personality of Godhead. If we put the focus so much, then we may forget altogether. As we were talking in the car about food for life, how, yes, it's good to distribute prasad, but if we ourselves are all the time talking how we're feeding poor people and they're hungry, and then we become on the mundane, there are so many mundane charities which are feeding poor people. But we should understand that the poor people need prasad and the rich people need prasad just as much. That the physical need of poor people to eat, have food, is utterly insignificant in comparison to their spiritual need to have prasad, which everyone needs. So it's relatively easy to raise donations if we say we're feeding the poor and this and that, but if we ourselves forget, which is quite likely if that's all we talk about, that we're supposed to be raising people to the platform of Krishna consciousness, then our consciousness becomes mundane, and Krishna doesn't accept offerings of mundane people, so it's not prasadam anyway. So these are some of the dangers. There's preaching means that we have to preach at some point. We have to make some relationship with mundane people, with the idea that by making some kind of communication, we can bring them up to the platform of Krishna consciousness. That's why when we meet people in America, you may say, "Hi, how are you?" Devotees don't talk like that. But if you want to distribute a book to someone, you may say like that. But your purpose is not to be a mundane American, but to give them the book about Krishna. But if you approach them in a manner that a sadhu traditionally might be expected to do, so they can't relate to that. So you approach them in a manner they can relate to, and then you give the book. So your job is done. So, preaching means to at all get the message across to them, there has to be some communication. But instead of bringing them up to a higher platform, we become so much concerned with that initial communication, and then the communication becomes the whole thing, we forget why we're supposed to be communicating with them. Then, instead of the communication bringing them up, then we go down. We come down to their platform. That's the story of every religion in the world. Every religion in the world is not running on the hype, on the platform of the original founder. As there's a saying, the last Christian died on the cross. Or Prithu Prabhu just the other day was saying that he was quoting a German philosopher that when a great man dies, someone wears his hat and someone wears his sword, but none of them is the same as that actual person. So these are all points to be considered. How do we get onto that subject? I can't remember because my brain's on less than 1% functioning. Yeah.
And last question. So how does one determine whether an attachment is it a material platform or a spiritual platform?
That if it's only for the satisfaction, is an attachment material or spiritual? An attachment is material or spiritual to the extent that it is selfless, and the abhilashita shunyam jnana kamadhyanavritam anukulyena krishnanushilanam bhakti rutama. When it's free of any personal desire and favorable for the cultivation of Krishna consciousness, that is called spiritual. Now, we may think that this is, I have no personal, just like this Kas Goswami was thinking, without any personal desire, I ran back and closed the window and dressed Gopal in warm clothes and gave him tea. So that it may seem to him it's without any personal desire, but because he offered him tea, that means he doesn't know how to satisfy Gopal. So it was actually material. So we have to, not only do we have to cultivate a sense of selflessness, but we have to know what Krishna wants also. That means we have to be guided by Guru, Sadhu and Shastra. If we just think, well, I'm doing it for the pleasure of Krishna, the lady sitting Krishna next to her as she watches TV. Yeah, well, I'm doing it for the pleasure of Krishna. You see, I'm even watching the children's programs because he likes them better. But so we may think I'm doing only for his pleasure, but we don't know what he likes. So how can we act for his pleasure? That we have to learn from Guru, Sadhu and Shastra. Hmm.
Swamiji, how can you criticize? She's doing her best to please.
She's doing her best to please Krishna. Doing her best is not her best. Best means she should act on the platform. She's doing her best within her contaminated state. If she actually wants to please Gopal, she should find out what Gopal wants. That's why, first of all, we have to understand Krishna as the Supreme Personality of Godhead. If we think, I'm treating Krishna just like my son, just like Mother Yashoda does, and this is the highest platform, that won't work because we're not in the consciousness of Mother Yashoda. We don't know what Krishna wants. And we presume that our own contaminated desires is what Krishna wants. That's very good. So this is the question, I'll repeat it. That previously I was going to Mangalarti every day, even if I slept short at night, but then often I found that due to having insufficient sleep, my chanting, the ability to concentrate on chanting was less. So then I decided not to go to Mangalarti every day so that my chanting would improve. Watch out for the dangerous mind. We should do whatever is required to advance in Krishna consciousness. Whatever is best for serving Krishna. That may be different in different circumstances. So watch out for the dangerous mind. Because it may be that, well, we took rest at 12 o'clock due to some preaching engagement or something. So I won't go to Mangalarti so that my chanting will be better. Japa chanting will be better. But then what happens is, we take rest in plenty of time, and then we wake up early enough, and we start thinking, well, actually I'm quite tired this morning, so I'll sleep some more, and my japa will be better. So, there may not be a clear answer for that. It depends on motive, and we shouldn't trust the rascal mind, actually. So, yeah, there may not be a clear answer whether you should go or not. Generally, we should go, but we have to consider also, there may be other health consideration. If one is only sleeping 2 hours a night, then the health is likely to... I mean, I've seen myself sometimes that after several nights of not having sufficient rest, and actually the body and mind simply can't function properly. So there are various considerations, but we have to act in a manner that is pleasing to Krishna in all circumstances. What may be in one circumstance or for some person, maybe it may be different in different circumstances also. But the general rule is there that we should attend. Then we should generally see that we can take rest in sufficient time as we are conditioned souls. We're not on the platform of nidrahara vihara kadi vijito, conquering overeating and sleeping. So I can only give a general answer. Yeah, but the thing is, we should do what's best for advancing in Krishna consciousness, but we should also be aware that we have the cheating propensity, and we tend to cheat ourselves also. Rascal mind. We ascribe spiritual motives to our materially motivated so-called devotional service. The two mix. One takes sannyas to increase preaching, but becomes enamored by the prestige that goes with it. So the motive might have been good, but the outcome might not be. You're supposed to be going to some meeting.
Yeah, I was on 5 minutes on the call, and nobody came, so it's done.
All right. Yeah, then.
So in the nectar of devotion, I said one should offer the Lord that one likes very much.
That which is dear to one, yeah. Well, like, for example, we find in Sri Chaitanya Charitamrita, the deity Gopal was in Katak, and the Maharani, she had a nose ring, very valuable nose ring, which she herself had used, but she wanted to offer that to Gopal. She thought, that's something very valuable and very nice, I'd like to offer to Gopal, the deity, who the king had kidnapped Gopal from another Vaishnav king, from Vijayanaga king, the king of Orissa, Utkal at that time. The Vaishnav kings, where they were fighting, and there are so many stories connected with this, very wonderful stories, which I won't tell now. So Gopal came to Katak, and she was thinking, I have this very valuable nose ring, I'd like to offer to Krishna. So there's an example. But don't offer I have a nice pair of running shoes. I like to often. I use them so many times, and now I'm going to offer them to Krishna. Not like that. We have, again, everything has to be guided by Shastra. So something. Generally, we don't offer something already used to Krishna. But in this case, seeing jewels, and we can already there that you can offer.
And if I like to eat sweets a lot, and if I'm offering sweets every day to Jagannath because of.
Because I like to eat. It's prasadam.
So how to the Balaram. My wife, she never offers sweets because she doesn't like that. I get upset, like, why don't you offer sweets? You're gonna have to educate it. So it's a mixed motive. So it's, is it good to at least offer for that?
Well, it's not on the level of Mother Yashoda, that's for sure.
Okay. So how should we balance? Should we offer it?
The best thing to do is to have a fixed idea of offering, what Krishna likes to eat. Although, for mixed devotees like ourselves, there is allowance in Shastra that you can offer what you like to Bhagavan. But better than that is offering what he likes. And actually, what he likes, on the pure platform, we also like, because we're thinking, this is Krishna prasadam. Krishna has tasted this. And when we're in that consciousness, then we can appreciate that how wonderful is this is prasadam. When we're appreciating, oh, this is so sweet and so much ghee, tastes wonderful, that's all right, as long as it is offered to Krishna. But when we're thinking, oh, how Krishna must have relished this, that's a better platform, isn't it? Brahmana Modaka Priya. You know that? The Brahmanas like sweets. So it's Brahmana Bhojana Priya. It's often said. But especially modak. Modak means ladu, Sanskrit word for ladu.
Gita says that raga and dvesha vimuktastu, those free from raga and dvesha, can get prasad.
Yeah, read it out. Raga
dvesha vimuktastu, vishayam indriyash charan, atma vashyar vidyatma prasadam adhigacchati. But a person free from all attachment and aversion and able to control his senses through regulated principles of freedom can obtain Krishna prasad.
Prasadam adhigacchati. So we should understand what prasad means. Actual prasad means when we accept this is the mercy of the Lord. If we're thinking that something for my enjoyment, then we don't, still is prasad, but actually, the whole world is prasad. It depends on our consciousness. As long as we are thinking of anything as for our enjoyment, then it's not. We don't actually get the prasad. Well, we get the prasad of the Lord, but in a different way. So there's bhoga buddhi and seva buddhi. The two are opposite to each other. The spirit of enjoyment and the spirit of service. Austerities are not important, but pure devotional service is. That's because you're thinking seva is undesirable. Due to bhoga buddhi, you're thinking that seva is undesirable. And therefore, it's on austerity to serve. Actually, there's no such, for a pure devotee, there's no austerity. Or there's no tapasya means we give up something that we like. But a pure devotee doesn't have any consciousness what I like. He only thinks what Krishna likes. So this consciousness of tapasya, that's for materialistic people, actually. Therefore, aradito yadi haris tapasatatakim, naradito yadi haris tapasatatakim. If we worship Krishna, then what is the need for doing any tapasya? And if we don't worship Krishna, then what's the use of doing any tapasya? But that is required to accept tapasya, to help us to become free from the spirit of worldly enjoyment. But that comes automatically in devotional service. For instance, if we have to distribute Srila Prabhupada's books, then we shouldn't think that, well, I'll do so on a sunny day when everyone's very friendly. But we should be prepared to do so in all circumstances. Many years ago, one devotee told me, he was in Germany, and in Germany the winter is, I guess, like Seattle. It's very cold, most of Germany, very severely cold. So one morning, devotees got up and they were supposed to go out on book distribution. It was very cold, and they were thinking that, well, maybe today we won't go out. It's too cold. How can we go out to distribute books? So they decided like that. And then they heard outside the house in which they're saying, they looked outside and there were workers with a jackhammer breaking up the road. They were doing road repairs. And then they thought, well, these people are doing, they're out in the cold, working, so they can get money for sense gratification. So we should also go out on book distribution for Krishna's pleasure. If they can do for sense gratification, then why shouldn't we? And not only going out in the cold, but with this horrible loud noise. So they thought, then we should also go out. Worth considering. We should at least discuss like this, and then that can help us in difficult times when there's some difficulty to transcend that difficulty and go on and serve Krishna. But again, we have to consider very carefully. Just like yesterday, I didn't attend the preaching program because I was feeling if I push now more, I'll get more sick. So I didn't go, but I sent Mahatattva Prabhu instead. But just with the consideration that, well, if I get more sick, then I may cancel other programs, or I may be at a program, but not there with full vigor, just like now I'm talking something, but my brain is more dead than usual. So one has to see. If we think that, well, I'm a little bit sick, so we'll just cancel it. But we have to see. We have to see how to. There's maybe some consideration how to pace ourselves in Krishna's service. If you push, and then very quickly you become sick or the body becomes burned out, maybe better to go a little slower and go on serving. But some devotees push, and the body collapses, and they pick it up anyway and go on pushing and set a glorious example, but they don't remain with us very long. Like Tribhuvanath Prabhu, was a famous devotee in England and Ireland, he just pushed. He'd preach all day and night, and he died young. He died, left this world maybe 3 years ago. He must have been, maybe mid-50s in his age. So he had a glorious life. Could have been longer. But anyway, whatever, we have to see what is Krishna's desire. Yeah, please.
Then how does one know what Krishna likes or what Krishna desires?
How can we know what Krishna likes? We have general directions in Shastra. Specific to our situation, we should take guidance from Guru, means Guru or Gurus, those who we trust, to guide us properly in Krishna's service. But Gurus may also say, many times disciples come to me and ask, should I do this, should I do that? And I tell them, you decide. You use your intelligence how to serve Krishna. You think about it. Don't accept a guru just to become a zombie. That I have to now. I don't have to think anymore. So he may quote some examples from Shastra, then you use your intelligence how to serve Krishna best. One takes instruction from Guru and Shastra, but at every step in our lives we have to make decisions, mostly minor decisions. At every step we have to decide how to act based on what we have heard from Guru, Sadhu and Shastra. We can't expect the Guru will be there standing there every moment saying, now lift your right finger. And the Guru is not meant for that either. Guru is meant to train the devotee how to serve Krishna, not how to become a robot. Serve means with heart and soul. So we'll finish the Hare Krishna.